Did I ever tell you the only three bits of advice my dad ever gave me?
No.
Number one, never write anything that you don't want read in a court of law or posted on the front page of the New York Times. Number two, never get a tattoo, because if you have to disappear, the first way they'll identify you is either by the tattoo or the scars of its removal. And number three, always put your back to the wall or know who's at your back. That was it. And he said the rest I'd figure out. So thanks, Dad.
I've got a fun little intro, Star Wars themed intro for us.
Okay. The views and opinions expressed within this podcast are solely those of the one expressing them and do not reflect the views or opinions of Secret Movie Club, Disney, or Lucasfilm. Thank you.
All right. Well, on that legal note, welcome to Secret Movie Club Podcast 27. Today we are talking about the original Star Wars trilogy, episodes 4, 5, and 6, in terms of where they fall chronologically, known as Episode 4, A New Hope, Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back, and Episode 6, Return of the Jedi. Actually, technically, they're known as Star Wars Episode and so on. We showed two of them this past weekend at our sci-fi weekend parking lot cinema. We showed Episodes 4 and 5, so those are definitely freshest. Before we dive into anything more, who is with us today?
Hello, it's Daniel.
Hey, it's Connor.
It's George Lucas, creator of the Star Wars saga. Talk about my cinematic masterpiece known as Star Wars, which is something I really admire because I rearranged the whole Star Wars arc.
Your voice isn't high enough for George Lucas. It's got to be more up here.
So there you go. We have two George Lucases on the show. Dueling George Lucases, which is kind of miraculous. And my name is Craig. I am the founder programmer of Secret Movie Club. So guys, first off, I just want to thank all Secret Movie Clubbers. You've really been supporting us online and coming out to our parking lot cinema, and it means the world to us. You're keeping us going. So just a thank you there. And then number two, this upcoming weekend, which is September 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th, and then actually next Thursday, the 24th, by the time you hear this podcast, it'll be too late because Thursday we're showing Tron and The Last Starfighter. But you already know about that because it's already posted and up. But on Friday, when you do hear this, Friday night onward, we're doing a week of, we're calling it Musical Madness. That's our series. Friday is Grease and Dirty Dancing, two feel goods. On Saturday, we're doing Purple Rain and La La Land. Totally different movies, but two movies that are swinging for the fences in terms of musicals. Sunday, we're doing Disney's Cell animated hand-drawn 1991 Beauty and the Beast musical. And then we're closing out Musical Madness on Thursday with two cult rock operas, the Ken Russell directed The Who's Tommy with like everybody from 1975 in it. And then 1982's Alan Parker directed Pink Floyd, The Wall. Both really trippy, really fascinating movie. The weekend will, as it has been, will be at the Glendale Sears parking lot. Tommy and The Wall next Thursday, September 24th, will be at 1027 South Los Angeles Street. That's a parking lot in downtown LA in the Garment District. And there you go. If you have any questions for us, write us at community@secretmovieclub.com or podcast@secretmovieclub.com. Also, you could probably get in and under the wire. We are putting together our entire October, which we hope to announce probably realistically in about 2 weeks. I hope sooner. But I think realistically, we'd be announcing it Monday, September 29th, that's going to be my guess. September 30th, we will be launching our next Secret Movie Club Radio Hour, written and directed by Daniel Ott, The Ballad of the Sin Eater, and that will drop Wednesday, September 30th at 1 p.m. We are in post-production on it now, and we are soon to record our Halloween anthology Secret Movie Club Radio Hour, which will drop, we believe, end of October sometime. Today, we learned from our monster movie podcast where we tried to talk about everything we had shown the weekend before, and it was too much. Not only should Godzilla get his own podcast, but really it should be like Godzilla, the first movie, should get its own podcast, then maybe the Showa era, then maybe the Heisei era, just too much. And we, Connor, our chief creative content officer, made the very astute recommendation that we narrow our focus on our podcast. So even though this past weekend we showed a bunch of sci-fi, including Alien and Aliens, and then Star Wars A New Hope, Star Wars Empire Strikes Back, and we closed out with WALL-E, and this Thursday we're doing Tron and The Last Starfighter, we are just going to talk today about the very first Star Wars trilogy. New Hope came out in 1977. Empire Strikes Back came out in 1980, and Return of the Jedi came out in 1983. So, Secret Movie Clubbers, you may or may not know this. I don't know how much we reveal in our podcast. Now that we're on 27, we've probably said things I've forgotten about. But Daniel is easily, I think, among us, although I won't want to take this away from Edwin. He is our resident Star Wars, just this. Danny, would it be safe to say that Star Wars is truly your jam?
Yeah. Yeah, I like the Star Wars movies.
You're a weeb for Star Wars.
Yeah. I've honestly dreaded this day. The Star Wars podcast of any podcast is the scariest podcast, because it will either be a nightmare or just people just say, I can't say some of the words because we're trying to keep our content down, but this could be the worst episode of our podcast ever, or maybe the best. We don't know, you know, but when I see Star Wars podcast by a bunch of men, I get a little nervous.
That is a good first act plant for tension. So listeners, yeah, you have got to listen to the whole podcast to see if we land this plane or not.
I feel like as a lot of filmmaker stories, Star Wars got me into movies at a young age. It was like Star Wars, the original Superman, and Mary Poppins. I don't know how it became that trio, but that's what it was. I was obsessed as a kid. I was 9 years old when Episode 1 came out, so I got to grow up with new Star Wars, and then I was finishing college when they announced that more were going to come out. And so it was this, just basically my entire existence from start to currently, hopefully, maybe to finish at this point with Disney and with doing what they're doing, Star Wars forever. And they're weird. They're these things that grow with you. It's very unique for a piece of art to work for you as a 3 or 4 year old and then continue to work for you as a 30 year old. They're very important to me, and getting to rewatch, being involved in getting to bring them to the drive-in, a feat we thought was sort of impossible because it's sort of notoriously hard to screen Star Wars. And we did it at the drive-in during a pandemic. It was like a very cool, I have like a little chip on my shoulder from it of like, wow, that was us. And I've been riding that high.
I mean, we almost want to assume that anyone listening to this podcast knows Star Wars, but you never know. So just set it up for us. What were these movies about?
Star Wars is a space opera, and it's about a young boy, kind of the chosen one type of narrative, who goes on a quest with a bunch of friends to stop an evil empire.
The first one is about an older man who takes a young boy to a bar.
Yes, and I meet a really attractive boy, and he takes them to go rescue a lady. Empire Strikes Back is a continuation of that. These friends are now in a spot of trouble because the people who they attacked in the first one aren't too happy with them. And we learn some revelations. And the third one is a rescue mission turned last-ditch effort to stop this all-powerful force and restore some type of peace and order to the galaxy. Or peace, I think peace and freedom. Order is not the right word. Freedom.
When you first saw Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, and Empire and Return of the Jedi, did you see the additions that it had, the added CGI, or did you first see the original versions?
I was gifted, when I was very young, the black VHS box, which were the original editions. And then when I was 7, the special editions came into theaters, and my dad took me to see them all as they were released. And as a 7-year-old, there's nothing more exciting than getting more of something. So the idea that there were more scenes to it, I didn't really understand it. You know, that there was going to be more, there was just changes. Like, oh, now the pit that was a hole with teeth has like a beak. And now Jabba the Hutt's in the first movie. So I got both. But I grew up initially on the VHS copies that were the original editions, I guess.
You know, I didn't even think about this, man, because I was running around at the drive-in. In the version we screened, did they have the Jabba scene in A New Hope?
Yeah. So the weird thing with the releases of these is that every single subsequent release on home video has added more things. So there's the 97 special editions, which added a bunch of stuff. And then the 2004 DVD releases redid some of the CGI from the 97 to make it look better, and then did some other tweaks in audio and visuals.
And we should say that this is all George Lucas is doing.
Yeah, he's very much, he likes to tweak with his stuff.
He seems to have, in his older years, become obsessed with the ideas of finally finishing Star Wars, which he, I don't think, ever really did.
2011 Blu-rays made more changes and got very, and to be clear, every change was very controversial with fans. Last year, under Disney, they were remastered again with a few other changes, and those versions are the ones we watched at the drive-in because we have to show the latest version.
For our audience, one of the things that's attendant to Star Wars love has been that probably more than any movie, even Ridley Scott's Blade Runner, which notoriously underwent several cuts by Ridley Scott himself. The original Star Wars trilogy, everybody who watched it when they first came out, you know, knew them in a certain way. And then George Lucas, as he gained power and money and control, would keep saying, when I made those movies, I only got 70% of the way there. And he kept changing things. Some things were visuals. Some things were effects. Some things were story things, though. Like the big thing was in the original Star Wars, if you saw it in 1977, Han Solo was a really ambiguous character who kills this guy in a bar. And you really don't know which way he's going to go in the series. Is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? And that's sort of lost because, and I haven't seen New Hope since I was a little kid, except at the drive-in. But then didn't they change it so that the Frito Guido dude, whatever that guy's name is, he shot first?
Yeah, Frito Corleone.
What's that guy's name?
Greedo.
Yeah,
they like digitally animate it so that it appears that they, I think the latest iteration, it appears that they almost shoot at the same time. That way Han Solo isn't a cold-blooded murderer is what they want to do.
We should get into it now because we're already talking about it. But the CGI in these movies, the added stuff makes me want to puke. I'm not an anti-CGI guy at all. I think it's a tool to be used. But in these movies, it doesn't match. I also rewatched Return of the Jedi. They do these, like, added-in aliens to, like, Jabba's place where they're, like, singing this song. And they're, like, dancing in ways where they're, like, coming up close to the camera. It's, like, a visual style that's totally incongruous with, like, the rest of the film. And, man, if I was Lucas, I'd be so embarrassed. Like, you make, like, okay, he makes the prequels and they're bad movies. But every once in a while, you make a bad movie. But going and changing all this stuff like that. And the reason why, I'll just say this, the reason why it's different than like Ridley Scott is Ridley Scott has never tried to stop the release of the original versions. Every version of Blade Runner is still pretty readily available. And it's a bummer with Star Wars because people won awards for those effects, and now these effects that people won awards for that George Lucas, while he was the director, essentially had nothing to do with. I mean, he was the supervisor, but these people put in labor into these effects, and now they just don't exist out in the world. I'm hoping that one of the good things Disney might be able to do is because they did do that release last year that me and Daniel saw of the original Star Wars, like the original version. Or it was like a...
It was like a 1981 print, a 70mm print?
Yeah, the only difference between it and when it originally released was the Episode 4 A New Hope subtitle, which when it originally released, the first film was just Star Wars.
And the people from the original were pretty upset about the idea that their art, the things they had done in the 70s that had made Star Wars this defining movie and leap forward in special effects and everything it did that made it so special was being erased, was really frustrating to them. And they were not shy to say that it hurt them that their art was being erased every time these were changed.
And I think Star Wars is maybe one of the most important pieces of American art ever made. And to have it altered like that and changed so, like, shoddily, too, and so, like, flippantly, it's very capitalist of George Lucas. He's like, you know, I'm gonna completely trash all the labor of these people who worked under me.
Oh, that's interesting. I thought you were going to say he just wanted to release new versions and make money, but you're saying he has no respect for the people that worked for him.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a really interesting, I think, and compelling argument, which removes the writer-director from it and more makes the comment, hey, this was a movie made at a time by a whole team of people.
I don't know if we've ever talked explicitly about auteur theory on here, but the George Lucas stuff is kind of like the ugly side of it. Auteur theory is like a film theory which views the director and usually writer-director as the author of the film. That's where like a film by, you know,
Alfred Hitchcock, Stanley Kubrick.
That kind of stuff comes along. And while I totally get it, and I think it's a very valid theory, especially for analyzing films, I think sometimes you'll get all the way through it and you'll get to stuff like this where people who worked on films, their work is getting erased. And that's like the ugly side of it, especially when it comes to like episodes 5 and 6, because George Lucas didn't even direct those.
And Connor, I actually want to come back to you because we dived right into the constantly changing nature of the movies, which I just want to chime in and say I find it very frustrating. But Edwin, what do you think about these movies?
Return of the Jedi is my personal favorite, in my opinion. I like it. I first discovered Star Wars during middle school, and then it kind of blew up when I was entering the high school, because I guess back then Star Wars was a big thing. And so, you know,
Lucas made an argument that I don't know that I buy it completely, but I do think it's worth putting forward, which is that a lot of people who saw Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, which are technically episodes 1, 2, and 3, and they came out in 99, 02, and 05, I think, or something like that. He often says that people that saw those first, that's their favorite trilogy. And then his argument would be that people who now have seen Force Awakens, Last Jedi, and Rise of Skywalker, that would be their favorite. But my question to you, Edwin, is you're somebody who's perfect because you're 21. You have only known movies in the era of CGI, so it's not like you could get really hung up on practical effects because you've been used to CGI from when you first saw movies. But you're saying you don't like the CGI in these movies.
No, they look really crappy and not too realistic. They look like they were made cheap, in my opinion.
If I could throw in something I was thinking of, it just hit me last night, and I wish I was a good debater, but I'm not. But whenever I get like a point, I'm like, oh, wow, it just dropped from the sky into my head. And I'm not, look, I'm not trying to pile on to Lucas because we wouldn't have any of this without him. And THX 1138 and American Graffiti and the first Star Wars and Empire and the Indiana Jones movies, those are all hugely driven by George Lucas, and I'm grateful for all of them. But it's interesting that somebody as intelligent as him would not have thought out that any effects he added later on would date. So you could add effects in 1999 or whatever, but 10 years later, they're going to look as bad as what you thought. So you might as well leave the movie alone, because actually all you're doing is replacing dated effects with effects that will date.
Or you make it, you know, this is the special edition. If you want the theatrical edition, here it's on the second disc.
But Empire came out when I was 3. And one of my earliest memories was Halloween. My mom took my hand. I think my dad, I wanted to be a house when I was 3 years old. So my dad in the garage literally built a house, and I put it over my shoulders and my hands came out of the windows and I walked. Incredible. Oh, it was great. And my dad was really good with he was a really good handyman, and I always wanted to be weird things. And actually when I was 6, I was C-3PO, which I didn't even think about until this moment. But so I was this house, and one of my most vivid early memories as a 3-year-old is my mom takes me in the San Fernando Valley to this house, and I look up ahead of me and there are all these stormtroopers, Han Solos, and Luke Skywalkers. It's almost like E.T. in a weird way, with their trick-or-treat bags. And I remember being like, wow, that's really cool. Those older kids are stormtroopers and whatever. And then I was a little house. And the thing that I can bring to the table is that I think prior to Star Wars, there wasn't really sci-fi for the suburban middle class kid, because sci-fi prior to Star Wars was like Logan's Run or Silent Running or 2001. And, you know, and then you'd have to go back to the 50s for like The Blob and War of the Worlds and stuff like that. But when Star Wars came out, it kind of mixed sci-fi and fantasy with, I think, real wish fulfillment and something intrinsically American. Another thing people don't really talk about is I was watching Star Wars last weekend, and it's totally like American Graffiti. Like Luke Skywalker literally gets in a hot rod and goes to, like, it's just George Lucas in Modesto translating that to a kid, and Modesto becomes Tatooine, or what's the name of the planet that
Tatooine.
Tatooine. And I was watching and I was like, George Lucas took every small town American kid who wants to make a big impact in the world with the short life that he has and made it a sci-fi movie. The impact it had on me, I admire the Star Wars movies. As I think I've said, Indiana Jones is my jam. I haven't seen a lot of the Star Wars movies since the first time I saw them. But I do remember culturally what a like earthquake Star Wars was for suburban kids.
I think the most beautiful moment of all these films is in the first film with Luke standing outside in that first big swell of the Force theme. And he's looking at the two suns.
Yeah, this it's weird because I think you can watch this at any point in your life and take something from it, but seeing it as a kid, it does do something that sort of does shift your psyche and becomes this sort of the juggernaut that it is in your brain. Like Connor and I grew up during its sort of resurgence, because to my understanding, sort of the late 80s, early 90s, they were trying to find out how do you keep selling Star Wars when there's no Star Wars to be had. And that's sort of when the expansion into books and video games.
They mostly tried computer games.
Yeah, which I was really into. I was a big reader and a young computer game kid. So I, Star Wars to me was also, it was every art form had it. I could video game it. I could read the books. You could just live in the universe as much or as little as you wanted. It sort of took a comic book approach to it where you can figure out your cup of tea and the type of storytelling that you like and follow an adventure in the universe you enjoy being in.
One of the things that Star Wars is really credited for, the good ones, is George Lucas's understanding of mythology and archetypes. And, a lot of people probably have heard this, but I think it bears repeating. George Lucas was huge into Joseph Campbell, huge into understanding mythology and archetypes, and Star Wars tapped into that in the sense that Luke is an archetypical character. He's the hero who is going to go on this quest, and he's going to be maimed. If you guys read Joseph Campbell, all this, what I'm saying is going to kind of make sense. But Joseph Campbell noticed that in all myths, from the beginning of human storytelling, whether it's in religion or stories, there are actually what are called called a monomyth or myths that are basically the same. And the hero's myth is a character. They have to make a big decision. They leave the comfort of their home. They go somewhere like the bar. What's the bar called? Mos Eisley?
Yeah.
They go to some like a bar or a port or an airport or whatever.
The music, by the way, the genre of that music in fiction is jizz.
So they go to that bar, but then that character goes into a world he has no understanding of on a huge adventure. And when he comes back, he's a hero, but he's also been maimed. And he's also often the hero can't reintegrate into society, which is really interesting. The hero saves society, but cannot be a part of it. And that's very true of Luke. And then also, too, there are these things in mythology about how the seeming bad guy turns out to be a doppelganger of the hero, Darth Vader. And we can get into all that. After Star Wars, everyone's always been trying to tap into that. And I would argue Indiana Jones and Lord of the Rings, and I guess the MCU. I mean, I guess you guys have hit on it. And maybe Batman, maybe some of the superhero movies in a weird way.
Yeah. And Harry Potter.
Yeah, and Harry is the same thing, right? Harry is Luke Skywalker as a magician. Harry doesn't know he's a wizard. And then suddenly, like, he goes to Jedi school. And I mean, you can almost...
And he's kind of the worst.
And then there's an Obi-Wan in Harry Potter. There's Dumbledore. And there's, like, all that stuff. But
I think the simplicity of the story helps with that. Because the simplicity and not just simplicity, but the universality of the story. That's not a word. Helps because what the movie's really trying to sell is this world. And so because you can very easily follow the story, it becomes about experiencing this new world and this very universal story through that new world, as opposed to if you were in a, you know, bizarre world telling a unusual story, it would be maybe too much.
And you don't have to, like, Star Trek is sort of this hard sci-fi about the exploration of the unknown. And
it's also kind of a Western in space. The old show is just kind of a TV Western in space.
But it takes more time to discuss sort of the intricacies of the universe, and especially in A New Hope, you don't get that. When they walk into the bar at Mos Eisley to find this smuggler, there's 100 different aliens, and at no point does someone say, what kind of thing is that? But a lot of kids, you know, as an example, the Ewoks in Return of the Jedi, the word Ewok is never spoken in that movie.
Huh.
Yet Ewok is a known entity. My wife, who enjoys the Star Wars movies, but, you know, has no personal connection to them outside of me, knows what an Ewok is because there's this weird, somehow that has gotten ingrained. These words of what these things are ingrained into culture despite never being spoken in the movie. I think it's really unique.
There has often been, I don't even know if debate's the right word for it, because it's not like it's super controversial, but a lot of people will cite either A New Hope or Empire Strikes Back as their favorite of all of them. Most people that I know cite Empire. So it's this interesting thing where you get this movie that launched 1,000 movies, a whole industry, revolutionized American filmmaking and blockbuster filmmaking. That one was directed by George Lucas. Lucas actually, I was talking to Daniel and other people, had such a miserable experience on Star Wars. Daniel, I think you were telling me he almost had a heart attack and a nervous breakdown in the studio. He just wasn't constitutionally built to be a director. And he realized that. He just realized he was not constitutionally built to have these constant fights with the studio. So in Empire, he became the story guy and the producer, but he got a director to do the day-to-day. He just no longer wanted to do that. And that was Irvin Kershner, who had directed some of the disaster movies of the 1970s. And he did Empire Strikes Back, which is one of the darker movies. The biggest reveal of probably the entire series happens in that movie. And we're going to talk about the reveal. So if you haven't seen this, then you stop now.
Why don't we talk about the movies in order? Because I think I'm the only one here whose favorite is the first one.
Oh, great. Okay. But let's start with Edwin, if that's okay. Edwin, A New Hope, what are your thoughts?
It's good. You know, John Williams scores kick-ass. You know, it's beautiful, of course. You know, Harrison Ford as Han Solo is great. You see how I really do not really dug it? I used to dug it a lot as a kid back then, but now I just, you know, it's just a thing. It was a phase.
I actually, you're doing something really key to me that I actually find really fascinating. Do you find A New Hope now kind of a kid's film? Do you feel like your tastes are just more adult tastes now? Or do you just find it just doesn't work for you like it did when you were a kid? It
doesn't work for me as it did as a kid. I enjoy it still. It's great. But it just, you know, I tried to be a fan. I got all their movies. I spent a lot of money getting the original DVD with the original version. You don't want to know how much I spend on Empire and Return of the Jedi.
I'm gonna guess $500.
No, like $20. I even got the f-ing prequels.
But it is interesting, Edwin, because I follow your Instagram and you and I talk movies. You actually have really gravitated, at least from what I perceive, more into horror and action
and comedy.
And comedy, things that could really happen. I don't actually see you posting a lot of fantasy or sci-fi.
I'm trying to get into fantasy. You know, I have a couple of favorite fantasy films, you know, like Labyrinth, Lord of the Rings.
That's a different podcast.
I just want to recap what you said about the Halloween thing. You just literally remind me of E.T. Spielberg almost did what Lucas did. He was about to take that Lucas route and redid E.T. basically with new CGI crap, but I assume people saw that. No, it looked horrible, it looked bad, so he knew the original version is the most better one, and thank God Spielberg realized that and just left the original alone, did not touch it, did not follow the Star Wars path at all.
It is a testament, you know, as somebody who does the programming for Secret Movie Club, when I called Universal for E.T., I asked them, I said, you know, I'd really like to show the 82 original with the guns, where the FBI has the guns. And they were like, oh yeah, Spielberg will let you show whichever one you want. That's your call. And I thought, like, there's a real defining difference in director mentality. One person was super aware of the audience, and the other person didn't seem to care about the audience.
Well, my favorite thing about Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope, is the title. It's so easy to say. I like how much that title implies that this was how things were always going to be. When they were making that first movie, Darth Vader was definitely Luke's dad, and Luke and Leia were definitely brother and sister. That's why they kissed. It's because George Lucas is a freak. He's nasty. I really like the first Star Wars the most because I think it's the only one for me that kind of stands as its own thing. Because I appreciate the artistry of Empire and understand why people like it more. But Empire kind of relies on Return of the Jedi, which I think is not nearly as good as the first two, and starts kind of running in circles towards the end. And Star Wars, the first one is the only, and I think as a non-Star Wars person, the first one is the only one you can kind of just watch by itself. Like every other Star Wars movie exists in some sort of like limbo state where it's connected to all this other stuff. But the first Star Wars is a pretty complete film. And again, it has the twin sons moment, which is my favorite moment in any of those, in any of the films. Just beautiful.
My memories of a kid, I didn't think of them separately. They were a single glob. But A New Hope was, you know, the first thing you see, and it's even rewatching it with an audience, it's sort of crazy what it accomplishes, and hearing people in their cars applaud and scream and clap about something they've probably seen 1,000 times or they brought their kids to see for the very first time. There's something so nostalgic about it. Even though I had absolutely nothing to do with those movies and I just like them, rewatching it and watching it feels like the equivalent of going home for the holidays. It's just a really nice feeling to have.
But when I was a little kid, I think I told Daniel, you and Edwin this. HBO had just started, and they would show the same movie four times in a day. So I remember seeing Robert Altman's Popeye like eight times with my sister. And I literally weirdly can quote that movie and the sequences to you. And they got New Hope. And so my sister and I watched that. And the thing we loved in the movie as five-year-olds and three-year-olds, we loved the trash compactor scene, where they're on the Death Star and they fall in the trash compactor and the little eel monster is pulling them down. My sister and I always waited for that scene because it was really intense to us. And then the walls started to close. And I think weirdly, that sequence was the sequence I enjoyed. And it maybe speaks to why I love the Indiana Jones movies.
Yeah, I was going
to
mention that.
Yeah, the Indiana Jones movies are always cliffhanger movies where you're in a jam and then you get in an even bigger jam and you're like, how are you going to get out of this? And it's ingenuity and people figuring it out through ingenuity. I would say about New Hope, I like it. I think it's a really good movie, but I'm not on the frequency that like you're on, Daniel. And that's always struck me. I'm like, obviously, it's totally revolutionized our industry. And I give it up for George Lucas for having the guts to make, I mean, and I mean this, and I want people to go from American Graffiti to that and to spend all your American Graffiti capital on like, I want to make a sci-fi fantasy kids soap like opera. That's pretty gutsy. And obviously it paid off. Just frequency-wise, I'm more on the Empire frequency than the New Hope frequency.
I do think New Hope has like a personal thing. We were saying earlier about American Graffiti. It feels like somebody making a movie, you know, about themselves. And I think Empire, just to lead into Empire, in Empire we find out that Darth Vader, the bad guy in the first one, is Luke's dad. I don't think they knew that, figured that out until they were working on Empire, personally. I think when they made the
No, they did not. Yeah. That's a fact.
And I think that's where you can feel a real shift in Star Wars into becoming the thing that it is now. I think if the original Star Wars had just been there, Star Wars would be completely different. I think Empire, that sort of expansion, changing Luke from an everyman character into a chosen one is like a big thing. And I'm always going to be more of a fan of the everyman type character.
Connor, that's actually a really fascinating point, because when you think about the Matrix in a weird way, even though I would easily say Empire, you know, the Star Wars sequels, I would watch over the Matrix sequels any day. Neo, I think what makes him so great in the first movie is he's an everyman, even though by the end you get into Chosen One territory.
But the movie kind of implies that he is the Chosen One because he believes he's the Chosen One.
Right, right. But it's interesting. I probably like Indiana Jones because he always remains an everyman. He's not chosen to find these artifacts. He just finds himself in these situations and has to respond to them as a pretty intelligent but normal dude. Daniel, what do you think about it? Or let me go to Edwin. Edwin, Empire Strikes Back.
That's good. I like it. You know, it's pretty decent. You know, it's a good picture. It's colorful. You know, it's more suspenseful, more action. You know, Han Solo gets frozen, you know, stuff like that. You know, Luke found out that Darth Vader is his father, and then he gets his hand chopped off. And
I've long considered it my favorite movie of all time in terms of, in the realm of what it did to me in my existence. I still think it is the greatest thing. I mean, I don't really know how to put it in any sort of objective term. It checks every box of what I look for in films in terms of, it also sets an almost unfair precedent to other sequels of how you continue something in a way that moves things forward and keeps things interesting with characters and plotting, and just a different feeling that still feels like Star Wars, but feels like, does not feel like it's trying to recapture. It feels like it's trying to move forward. I honestly don't remember learning the reveal as a kid and what it did at the time. I think I was a little too young to remember that detail, but it was the one I always turned back to as a kid and the one I still turn back to now. I usually watch it every year on Star Wars Day, and I'm always taken with some new detail of, from an artistic thing, but also just how in its 2-hour runtime, how much happens.
So Daniel, I'm with you. Interestingly, I consider Empire a truly great movie. It is the one of the nine that I actually probably see every 2 years. I'm not an every year, but whenever I want to see a movie that's an epic movie that cross-cuts between storylines, I cite Empire as one of the greatest of those. And I'm really obsessed with cross-cutting. I didn't know this till Daniel actually put it on my radar, and then I did some research. It turns out that George Lucas's wife at the time, Marsha Lucas, is often credited with saving Star Wars A New Hope, because even though Lucas had written it the way it was written, and definitely was the visionary, definitely that was his vision, the way he was going to edit Star Wars A New Hope was much more linear. And the original rough cuts of A New Hope left people cold. And Marsha, who was an editor, she edited Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore and Taxi Driver. And she encouraged Lucas, basically her husband. She said, look, let's cross cut between these storylines more, and you'll always have emotion. You'll always have cliffhangers. You'll always have investment. And when you go back and look at A New Hope, I don't think you can underscore or overstate how important the cross cutting is to that movie working. And I think in Empire, they realize that, and the movie is intentionally designed to be cross cut. So you have Luke on Dagobah, you have Han and Leia and Chewbacca on the run, you have Darth Vader basically like trying to get to them, and you're cross-cutting between these three storylines that then all come to a climax in the third act, and then all the characters are in one location. I'm really obsessed with structure, and you come, the third act is all the characters finally in one location, even though they only see each other all for 1 second, which is kind of dope.
I should say, I also think it's great. I think both of the first two are great films.
Moving to the third, so interestingly, George Lucas originally offered this movie, the third movie, to David Lynch. And David Lynch has a really famous story where he went up to
George. This is your project. You should direct this.
Which is basically what Lynch said. He went up to Marin County, and Lucas showed showed David Lynch all the things they were going to do in Jedi. And David Lynch realized it was not going to be a David Lynch movie. He was going to have no say in it. He famously, people should YouTube this, he famously talks about how he really freaked out when Lucas was showing him Chewbacca. And Lynch was like, what the F is this thing? He was like, this space monkey. And he was like, I just can't. Now, ironically, Lynch then agreed to do Dune, which was an experience he hated as well, which we can get into another time. But Lucas realized, okay, I'm not going to get a hot young director. So he got a guy named Richard Marquand, who I actually don't know what he had directed before this, but they also called the movie, interestingly, Revenge of the Jedi. And you can get YouTube trailers where they released the trailers in 83 and 82, and it says Revenge of the Jedi. And then someone had to tap Lucas and be like, wait, but you created a mythology. The Jedis aren't about revenge. And Lucas was like, oh, yeah. So then they changed it to Return of the Jedi, kind of taking a page from Tolkien.
Which then that title was used much later for the third prequel, Revenge of the Sith.
Which works, because Sith would take revenge. So anyway, the third movie, Episode 6, came out in 1983, brought the original trilogy home. It provided essentially a finale. There were no loose strands left open. They could make more movies, but they didn't have to. You could stop there and be like, I saw Star Wars.
And that has a cool chase with those stormtroopers and little floating bike thingies they got there through the trees somewhere up there in the San Francisco area. Those big trees, I forgot what it's called, but
Endor. Yeah, the sequoias.
Sequoias, yes. Thank you, Craig. I appreciate that.
Yeah, they shot that by like a guy like going like 5 feet at a time, taking a picture 5 feet at a time. They like timed it out.
On a Steadicam. Actually, if you're into effects, that bike chase, which is dynamite, is a guy on a Steadicam shooting, like you said, Connor, like 1 frame per second as he just walked through like a forest. And then it's like blue screened or green screened or something with models. And it kind of like the way they did Temple of Doom, the minecart chase, but in a slightly different way.
I really enjoy the final battle, which is amazing, in my opinion. Where Luke is going up against his father, but going up against Palpatine, and Vader's like, you know what, Palpatine, I'm gonna throw him off a damn bridge. But the one problem I did have when I first saw it, I was confused by this because I think I saw Return first, is that 90s Anakin is there. And I was like really confused by like who the hell is this guy? He looks nothing like his father at all when they took off his helmet.
It also doesn't make any sense because wouldn't then Obi-Wan be Ewan McGregor?
Yes, exactly. Like, what's going on, George? What's going on, man? What are you doing?
Why would he become his... I guess he's pre-Darth Vader, but wouldn't he just look like the guy he is now?
I know what you guys are all saying. That's so fascinating. I saw Return in the theaters, and it was extremely touching. Extremely touching when Luke removes the mask. And then when you see him at the end, like, your tears are in your eyes because it's like one of the biggest character changes of all time.
No, now it's just like Hayden Christensen, like, hey, I'm in this movie too. I like Return. I think it's a suitable ending. I just don't think it has the personality, personal stuff as the first one or the craft of the second one. And while I admire the beats in that last battle, I do feel like once they get to Endor, the movie kind of starts like spinning in a circle until the end. You know, they kind of just, it's kind of just like Han and Leia shooting down a hallway with Ewoks, and then Luke and the Emperor and Darth Vader looking out at space battles, and then people flying around, and kind of just cross cuts between those things for 30 minutes without much like story progression, I feel like. I mean, there's like story progression, but it's like, we got the laser off so we can do the shield thing. It's like, what? But it's good. My fourth favorite.
Yeah, I think Return is very entertaining, and I do love it. It is weird that the final thing in a trilogy spends its first half hour with a rescue mission and then only gives us an hour and a half.
That's the best stuff, though.
It's great. I love it. But it just like, there's a singular story that takes up almost, I think, over a fourth of the movie, and then you have to wrap up the rest of the trilogy in that other thing. It's just kind of a strange way to start, even if it is dope. The Endor stuff is fine. It does have one of my favorite shots in the franchise, and I don't know why. I was obsessed with this as a kid, but it's the shot of when Lando's piloting the Millennium Falcon and they're going to make their final Death Star run, and all the ships are flying low on the Death Star 2, and they all flip over and fly into the reactor hole, and the camera goes up into the air with him and then flies back down into it. And I don't know why. I think it's in the TIE, right as it happens, the TIE fighter track, John Williams TIE fighter, that da, 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 starts, and it's the coolest thing in the movies. But then it's just sort of, yeah, I think the final battle between Luke and Darth Vader is really great because it's so tied to emotion. When he finally gets Luke to break and Luke lops off his hand and almost goes in for the kill, you see what made Darth Vader Darth Vader in his son for the first time. I think that's really powerful. And little moments that I didn't realize as a kid that I now realize as an adult, like when the Emperor is telling Luke to strike him down and Luke finally grabs his lightsaber and goes for it and Darth Vader blocks it with his lightsaber, is really interesting to me, because that is, Luke made the decision to kill him, and Vader, it's the first moment as an adult I now realize Vader was stepping in to stop his son from going his path. I think Vader was already making decisions for what was to come.
Oh, interesting.
Because I think, you know, you could look at it as he's saving the Emperor, but I think it's more of his gradual progression.
It's a gray area.
Yeah. And I like that. I like those little moments. I do have the thing that it's been talked about, but Harrison Ford looks very bored in this movie. Like, he's kind of giving it half.
He wanted to die in the previous
one. Yeah, he wanted to die. And you can kind of tell a lot of his stuff. He's got a lot of great gifts in it, but he's just really going not all in the Ewok part. He looks very bored.
Those Ewoks are cute, though. They're like big teddy bears.
Ewoks are great.
I'd hang out with an Ewok.
The special edition changes to the Ewoks are horrifying, though.
Those eyes?
Yeah, they gave them real eyes in the new Blu-rays, and it's very unsettling.
I like Return. I think we're all kind of... Yeah, I think Return is... I really like it, actually. I have nothing bad to say about it. I know some people say, oh, Return is a drop-off, and I don't feel that way. I feel it's good. I think it's a good ending to that trilogy. I enjoy the sequences and the storytelling. I enjoy that whole... What's the name of the beast that digests you over 1,000 years?
Sarlacc pit.
Yeah, I love that Sarlacc thing.
Though technically, you would probably die of like dehydration.
Yeah, 10 days in.
I think it like keeps you alive so that you suffer.
Ugh. Yeah, it was horrible. Yeah, I mean, that was pretty intense. I always remembered that detail. So I really enjoy Jedi. I think the first trilogy is I don't know that anyone would argue this, but the episodes 4, 5, and 6, I think they all work. And in a very selfish way, I understand that the others employed hundreds of thousands of people, and I understand the altruistic arguments about why you keep making movies. But I just don't know that any of the ones after, except Rian Johnson's The Last Jedi, did anything to forward the story truly, in my opinion. I literally could watch those three and Rian Johnson's The Last Jedi and be like, oh, what they're doing here with the mythology is interesting. One thing that we haven't talked about, maybe to wrap it up, and I know Lucas has acknowledged this, but there's a bit of a tragedy to me about George Lucas. And I don't, tragedy is probably not the right word, because you could argue that he kept the film industry going and, you know, his effects created Pixar. He owned Pixar and he revolutionized the industry. All those things are true. And I tip my hat to him. And he did all those things in the 80s, 90s, aughts and beyond. But, you know, when you look at the first three Star Wars movies, the metaphor is abundantly clear. And that's that these rebels believe in democracy, and these rebels believe in kind of a messy democratic universe, and they're fighting fascism, and that people as good as Darth Vader, you know, before when he was Anakin, when he was the dad, can be tempted by modes of government where a republic becomes an empire. And I find that very, very powerful. And the Ewoks, you guys probably know this, were meant to be the Viet Cong. The Ewoks are meant to be the VC. The Return of the Jedi is kind of a Vietnam metaphor. And, Lucas was originally supposed to direct Apocalypse Now. He was on board to direct Apocalypse, and he was going to do it cinema verite style, and it was going to be fascinating in the 70s because he was friends with Coppola. And I feel that, and I know everyone said this, but Lucas became the Empire. I think there's some kind of cognitive dissonance in his head that he's still a rebel. But I've heard Lucas for 40 years talk about how he's going to go back and make avant-garde movies. I don't know if any of you guys have ever heard him. Every interview, he's like, oh, no, my next movie is going to be like THX. I'm going back to that. I'm going back to the zoetrope days. And he never did it.
And it should be noted that he could. There's no reason he couldn't.
And his buddy Francis did. Francis Ford Coppola went back and made Youth Without Youth, Tetro, Twixt, this movie Distant Vision, which none of us have seen, and is now trying to do Megapolis. So whether you like those movies or not, Coppola did go back and make very personal, auteur-driven films. There's no reason why George can't do that. But there's something about him just paying lip service to it that makes me feel like you made a movie that was weirdly about your future. You started as Luke, you ended up as Darth Vader, and maybe even most tragically as the Emperor. And so, there's still time, George. There is still time for you to make a late avant-garde film and become Luke again. Daniel, any thoughts about Republic, Empire, George Lucas? I know you're a big proponent of Rian Johnson's Last Jedi.
I am. I love it a lot. I would rank it as my second or third Star Wars movie. I think what it does as a Star Wars film, and especially as a blockbuster, is fascinating. I mean, the world at large, Star Wars is a very, very, very popular thing that goes all around the world, and some people that I had some
we're
people
getting,
that
we're
I
getting
see.
Into stuff that's going to make me talk for another 30 minutes. This feels like it should be relegated to the sequel prequel episode.
All I'll say is, what the original movies do, what they speak of, and what a lot of fans get behind, they should maybe look at that with the world at large currently. And are you a rebel or are you a Muppet?
So we're cross-cutting conversations here as well. Daniel, I have nothing to say about Bigger Luke, Smaller Luke, other than my amusement that this is a thing. But Daniel, something I'll say to you is I think that Rian Johnson is actually being true to the spirit of Star Wars, which is that anybody can make a difference in the universe. These rebels can turn the tide of the Empire. That's what I find inspiring about episodes 4, 5, and 6. And I think that he takes it and makes it even more democratic in Last Jedi because he says it's not a family thing. It's not royalty. It's not like Jedi is just passed down bloodline by bloodline, which is, I think, the danger of all the sequels. He's saying anybody, Rey, and I know that in Rise of Skywalker, they say she's like Palpatine's granddaughter or whatever. I don't know what that is. I haven't seen it yet. But I choose not to see Rise of Skywalker because I thought Last Jedi took it where it needed to go, which is that anybody could be a Jedi, which is the whole point of America. And the whole point of America is that you could come from anywhere in the world and you could come. And if you have a set of talents, you can contribute to this culture and this society, which is unique amongst all societies. And I'm not going to get on a big America kick on that because we are, as Daniel pointed out, in a moment of huge conflict for the soul of America. But that was the thing that inspired me. And that's what I liked about Last Jedi. And I'd like to see more of that, not bloodline stuff. I hate kings and queens. I'm Irish. So I have a friend who has a dog named George. I never call him George. I call him Jorge. I'm like, I'm not calling that dog George. And my friend's like, why? And I'm like, listen, I'm Irish. You figure it out. That dog's name is Jorge. And whenever I see that dog, I'm like, what up, Jorge? And Jorge nods at me. And I'm like, yeah, you get it. They should have never named you after that f***ing king.
It could have been a Beatles thing.
Pop culture and final thoughts with the boys. Guys, what are you doing?
I have had it for a little bit. One of my quarantine goals is to go through the Criterion Ingmar Bergman cinema collection.
Yeah.
I think it's 39 movies. I'm about 7 in, and they've curated them as if it were a film festival, so they're not chronological. They are ordered thematically. And there's 200-300 page book of essays that go along with it.
What 7 have you seen?
Let's see. Let me open my little booklet. I have done Smiles of a Summer Night, Crisis, A Ship to India, Wild Strawberries, To Joy, and Summer Interlude so far. Tonight's movie is Summer with Monica. I already loved Wild Strawberries. I had never seen Smiles of a Summer Night, and I loved it. It was great. It's one of his first movies, and it's this sort of kind of a romantic comedy with some undertones. Bergman has now, in that span, has two movies about a father's young bride getting with his son. So some interesting things to unpack about him there. And then I also started the Battles Without Honor and Humanity series, which I think in America is called the Yakuza Papers or something. And there's like 8 of those, but it's basically like post-war Japan, Yakuza, a war sort of within them. And it's very violent and all handheld and really good. It's good stuff. And October's starting, so we gotta do some spooky movies.
Like spookies?
Spookies. Spookies every night in October.
Speaking of classic world cinema, I watched Space Truckers this last week. It's a Stuart Gordon film from the 90s about space truckers starring Dennis Hopper, Stephen Dorff, and Charles Dance. It's actually a lot of fun. It was like, I was expecting it to be a kind of like whatever B-movie because, I like Stuart Gordon, but I mostly like the 80s stuff. Sometimes he makes a From Beyond and sometimes he makes a Castle Freak. And I thought this was going to be more of a Castle Freak, but it was more of a From Beyond. And I enjoyed it quite a bit. And I actually think on Sunday, the day 2 days after this comes out, me and Mitchell from Secret Movie Club are going to be streaming Walking Dead Season 1, like the first half of it, the Telltale Game, on my Twitch, twitch.tv/ConnorCruz. Something we've wanted to try out where we do kind of a narrative game screening, in quotes, where this is me and Mitchell. I mean, the idea being like do a stream but have it emphasize narrative and storytelling in the game as opposed to just like chatting and gameplay. So that'll be twitch.tv/ConnorCruz, probably at 2 on Sunday Pacific time.
Check it out, y'all. And Edwin.
You know, I've just been laying low, you know.
Edwin, you're on mute. Your all that, Edwin. All that setup, Edwin.
We're skipping
you. We heard you preparing, and then it cut you up.
Like I was saying, you know, I'm laying low. You know, I'm surviving, I'm killing, and rocking it. Went back to playing Warzone again, you know. Still a little rager, you know, just, I finished all the Alien series, you know, Alien 3 was not that great as I thought it would be, you know, Alien Resurrection was pretty fun, Ral Perlman is a badass, you know, Shigoni is killing it, Winona was kind of annoying, you know, kind of wished there was more to it, but, you know, I just been here, home, rocking, stocking, token, sleeping.
Brad Dourif gives one of his all-time best weirdo performances in Resurrection.
Yeah, it does. It does. It really does. Just, I've been perfecting my Lando Calrissian voice, you know, because it sounds pretty badass. And then I've been talking a lot of Christopher Walken as well. You know, it's like this, you know. Sometimes a man could go a little crazy because he's all by himself. Watching movies.
Is that what's happening, Edwin? Can I ask? Do you need us to come over there for an intervention?
You know, Edwin, you're so good at impressions, you'll never be by yourself. You always got some fun little friends there.
I know, it's crazy, but the thing is, you start to go into the unknown, into oh, God. It's the connect. It's the connect.
Edwin, come back. You can't leave us on that note.
I'm coming.
That's like an Empire Strikes Back note.
I'm coming
Edwin,
back.
Are you okay?
Yes, okay. It's just the what did I do?
All right, Greg.
I do want to, there he is. I'll just say what I've been saying. I finally started my calls for my 10 to turn challenge to get people registered to vote. I was feeling rightfully very hypocritical and dumb to be talking about this and not have actually started those calls. So I've reached out to 4 people. Edwin would be 5 if we can get Edwin registered to vote this week. Just for anybody who hasn't heard me ramble on about this in the previous podcast, the election is less than 50 days away, November 3rd. I am not going to tell you how to vote. That really is offensive. You have reasons for voting the way you're going to vote. Maybe eventually I'll share with you how I'm going to vote or if I can find a way to do it that isn't lecturing people or pretentious.
Here's a way. Do you feel better off now than you did 4 years ago? You feel like we're in a better place?
Good question. Totally legitimate question. I love that. But I did talk to someone in Arizona. And I talked to 3 people in Michigan. And what I would encourage folks to do, if you have an interest, hashtag 10 to turn, find 10 people that are in these states, Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Texas, Ohio, Iowa, Nevada, any of those states are all going to be critical, critical states. And if you know people who know you, like you, family members, friends, just reach out to them and see if they're registered to vote, if they know where their polling place is. You can get all that info on vote.org. It's real easy. You can, but I do want to tell everybody that actually you have about a week and a half left to register to vote in certain states. Also, ballots have already gone out. They actually are starting to vote in North Carolina right now, which kind of blew my mind. I'm learning all about our election system. I didn't know this. So the voting has started or is about to start. So we're in it now. What I really would love November 3rd is if we had a big turnout and a lot of people voted, and whatever the result is, you can't argue it. We're not going to sit here for months being like, how did it turn out? People can't delegitimize it one way or the other. No side can say, oh, we really won it. I don't want that. I want such a big vote that it is so declarative that no one can argue it. And I'd like to encourage you to vote. I'm going to use my pop culture on that probably for a while. And that's it. So thank you, guys. Connor is reminding me through the miracle of visual Skype. You can find out about everything we're doing at secretmovieclub.com. You can write us a community at secretmovieclub.com, podcast at secretmovieclub.com. This weekend, we are doing musicals at the Glendale parking lot. And then next Thursday, we're doing The Who and Tommy and Pink Floyd's The Wall, the movie versions at the 1027 South Los Angeles parking lot in downtown LA. And we are going to launch, I hope, knock wood, our entire October in about a week and a half. So you will find out all the movies we're doing in October. And that's it. Okay, guys, thank you.
Goodbye. Have a great week.
Do our favorite Star Wars noises.
Yeah. Star Wars.
I wish I could do a good Han Solo. I tried to smile like Han Solo for my senior year photo, and the photographer looked at me and he was like, there's something wrong with your face. Would you just smile? And I couldn't pull off the Harrison Ford smirk, so I had to drop it. All right, guys. Good night. Good afternoon. Goodbye. Talk to you soon. Peace.